No, do your intro now. Do it now.
The intro now?
Yeah. You've been on the show. This is your third time.
Right. Yeah.
I'm starting to repeat people a lot. I'm running out of friends.
It's becoming a novel.
Right. It's an illustrated series.
Soon to be a series followed by a prequel.
It's going to be a mini series on AMC. They're making mini series out of everything. So why the hell not, right?
Hey, this is Jason Wisdom from Death Therapy, and this is the third chapter in my As the Story Grows.
What would you say you do here?
Have a good time all the time.
Who's got it better than us?
Nobody!
What in God's holy name are you blathering about?
Well, I'll tell you what I'm blathering about. I've got information, man.
I want you to be realistic.
What do you love about music?
Man, being realistic.
As the story grows.
You got this, Travis. Make him wait for it. Boom.
Check it out. Look at, I'm in really bad shape. Come on, please.
Bob,
please.
Bob.
Give me. I need.
Bob.
Give me.
Okay.
Please.
All right.
Welcome back to the next chapter, Jason's third chapter.
Yep.
As the Story Grows, my name's Trav, and we got something special going on. I'm falling into this track by track thing. I'm starting to really have fun with this, and our pal and my brother here, Jason, says he has an album coming out on Solid State very soon.
Death Therapy.
Death Therapy. And he reached out to me and he said, "Hey, man, we gonna do that thing?" And I was like, "I thought we just did one last, like, near Halloween." And he's like, "Well, let's do another one." So I was like, "Yeah, absolutely, we should," because the album then was like done. But I don't even think you announced the Solid State thing on the last one because you couldn't.
Yeah, isn't it crazy how this works? And see, there's a lot of stuff that one of the reasons I wanted to do this again with you is there's a lot of stuff that I've told you that nobody else knew. You know, unless they listen to your podcast. So back in November.
Oh, I mean, do I even do a podcast anymore?
Back in November, we did a tour with Project 86, and we played a show not really in Philly, but what, Ardmore?
Oh, that's right. I was busting your stones because it was on like a Tuesday night, and I couldn't make it. Yeah.
So Ardmore, and the guy came out. He was like, you know, super stoked about I think he met you at a show or something, and he was like a huge fan. So the guy he'll listen to this at some point.
Oh, cool. Who is it?
If I remembered his name, I would have said it. I'm sorry about that. But anyway, he was super stoked. And he was like, "Man, you know, congrats on the Solid State thing." And I was thinking, and nobody knows that. You know, we didn't announce it till end of January, but I had told you back around Halloween on the podcast. So what I'm saying is I like the fact that you and I can talk. We can kind of, you know, it's almost like we can start the rumor mill.
Yeah, let's do it.
Which is kind of rad. So yeah,
let's start some rumors.
Yeah, we actually
there's a Russian spy ship off the coast of Long Island.
Yes. Oh wait, that one's true. Sorry, never mind.
The Russians hacked this podcast. but a funny story about that. So like last week, we released a lyric video for your favorite song on this record, "Slow Dance with Death." And there's all these like new Facebook algorithms and stuff that you and I were talking about earlier. And so for some reason it went up, and anytime somebody tried to share the video, it would block it and not let them share it for some sort of weird copyright reason or something. Like, we don't have the right to post our own songs.
What?
So we were trying to figure out what was going on, and ultimately we concluded that the Russians hacked the Facebook post. But anyway, we got it up. But yeah, there you go. So
weird. I wonder why I was getting blocked. I mean, it's yours to put up.
Yeah, I don't know. It's there's some weird thing between all of the algorithms that YouTube uses now that are like super wacky, and all the algorithms that Facebook uses now, which are like becoming incredibly crushing, I feel like, for bands and businesses. You know what I mean? Like, if you don't appease the Facebook gods and give them money to promote your post, then they're just well, you may have 1,000 followers, but we're only going to expose 2% of them to this post unless you give us money. When we shared that video, like, I shared it on my personal page and no one had problems watching it or sharing it. It was totally cool. But then when we posted it on like the Death Therapy page, it was like, you know, nobody could share it. It was just so weird that anyway, that's for all the like industry people and nerds and small business owners out there who would be frustrated by the way Facebook is now turned into this, like, I don't know, like they clamp down on you unless you're going to give them money for your posts. Like, even if you're just a business owner that wants to post something to your, you know, 200 followers, it's like, well, they won't all see it unless you like throw them $5 or something to Facebook. Well,
that's how they do it in 2006 or something like that. Seth and I bitch about this all the time. In 2006, they said, you don't need a .com. Don't waste your money on deaththerapy.com. That's crazy. You'll have to pay $12 a year for that and hosting and everything. Yucky. Just come over here and do /deaththerapy. We'll give you a free website. And then they wooed everybody in and then went, okay, do you actually want to reach everybody? That's going to cost you $18 a month or something. They totally duped everybody into it.
Yep.
What are you going to do? So just buy your .com and then direct it to a Tumblr page and just put up a blog site, and it'll cost you like $13 a year for the .com, and the Tumblr hosting is free until Tumblr catches on and they start charging, whatever.
Yeah, you do realize you were just like, okay, so buy a .com, do a blog, direct it to a Tumblr. All of the it seems like a lot of steps, man. Facebook's so easy.
Right. Well, right. Yeah, of course
it's easy. That's their whole appeal, I guess, is like it's all right here.
Yeah.
But anyway, we'll have to get Seth to join in that conversation. And not Seth Heacox. That's not who we're talking about.
Never Seth Heacox. Never. Never Seth Heacox.
We need to talk baseball. You need to get Seth Heacox on to talk baseball. It's coming up, man.
Yo, you want to talk baseball? I got an email from somebody who was like, please stop talking sports. So now we're going to talk about sports for a minute. Did you hear the Governor Christie from New Jersey smashed the Phillies, the Philly fans, people of Philadelphia, Citizens Bank Park? He went off on a sports talk show. He was like, the Phillies are awful, which is true. They have been awful. Like, the fans are awful people. The stadium isn't a safe place for civilized people. He totally just like shit on everybody from Philadelphia.
Which of those three things do you disagree with?
I disagree with everything except that the Phillies are awful. They have been awful lately, but I mean, like, of course he's a Mets fan now. I didn't hear him talking in 2007 when the Phillies took the
That New Jersey baseball team is so awesome.
Right.
They're just killing it.
Exactly.
Well, okay, cool. Well, that's our whole baseball talk. The Braves are also awful. End of discussion.
There you go.
Yep. Atlanta sports teams. Actually, I predict the Braves are going to make it to the World Series, and they'll be winning until the last inning of the last game, and then they'll give up 800 runs. What? Did you not watch the Super Bowl this year?
Yeah, but
just using it as an analogy. When all of the statistics that everybody can come up with will say there's no way they can possibly lose, I'll be on Facebook saying it was a good season, guys. Yep. I guess it's over now. We're going to lose. And lo and behold, we lost.
You don't have Matt Ryan pitching for the Braves either. So
well, anyway. All right. Well, let's talk about music.
There's a sports talk. And if that pissed anybody off and they fast forwarded through that, Good. I'm glad, because baseball season's coming, and I'm actually a little bit stoked. So, Jason Wisdom started a two-person all-bass guitar, mostly bass guitar, driven band called Death Therapy, which the name derived from one of the most hilarious, underrated 80s movies ever called What About Bob, starring Mr. William Murray.
Yes.
And we've covered this on a podcast in the past. It's good stuff, and this is going to be another track by track thing. I'm excited to do this. I'm having a lot of fun doing this. I did it with Carly from Canderia. I have some other ones. Did it with Zayo back when people cared about that.
That's like, a great record, man.
Dude, it's a phenomenal record. But
it's really good. There's been been a really cool return to form by a few bands. I feel like from that era. I'm not saying. Obviously, Zayo precedes Norma Jean by a lot, but the new Norma Jean record is also a pretty killer return to form. If you haven't checked it out, you probably should.
I haven't.
It's really good.
Polar something, right?
Hmm?
Polar.
Polar. Polar Bear. Yeah, that's what
polar,
it is.
Polar similar. Polar Seltzer similar. Water, something like that. Anyway, we're not.
Yeah, Norma Jean, please take Death Therapy on tour with you.
Yeah, do that.
Moving on.
So let's focus on this now. We're going to go track by track through this new Death Therapy album, which is called The Storm Before the Calm, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Cute. I see what you did there.
Yeah. You see I switched a couple words around?
Right. Because usually it's the calm before the storm, but yeah. You were all like, woo!
Let me throw you guys a curveball. Oh, sorry. We're not supposed to talk about sports, but
sports talk now.
Stop it. Get some help.
Storm Before the Calm.
Let's get into this.
In stores, 2017. 224, something like that. February 24th.
You sure? There was a lot of numbers. There's a lot of numbers.
Yeah, 2017, February 24th.
Jason, this is the worst of your three interviews. I'm just going to...
Yeah, it's already over. Luckily, the album's really short, so we'll get through it really quick. Okay.
First song, Until Then.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so this is kind of cool to start with this one because it's also the first track on the record. It's the last track that was written for the record. So on the very last day of tracking this album, I was tracking it with a guy named Matt McClellan, who's done quite a few records for Solid State or just indie metal bands in general. He's a really, really cool guy.
Mm-hmm.
He did a BTA record with Matt Goldman, with the Celestial Completion record we did with Matt Goldman and Matt McClellan. So driving to the studio on the last day of tracking, and we only had 9 songs, and we needed a 10th song. I mean, we didn't have to have a 10th song, but I kind of OCD need a 10th song, to feel like it's a real record. Was like, okay, what are we gonna do? We're gonna do a cover song. We were looking at possible cover tunes. We were looking at one by what's the band New Order, the old 80s synth band.
Yeah, dude, you're in my wheelhouse.
Yeah, we were looking at them doing a cover of one of their songs.
Okay.
Kind of like there's almost like this grand storied tradition of industrial goth bands covering their songs, it seems like.
Right.
So we were looking at that, and then it was just like, no, I don't want to do a cover song. So writing to the studio on the last day of tracking, started having this idea for a groove and for a melody and stuff, and just kind of singing it the whole way to the studio so I didn't forget it. Sit down and you know, had the lyrics and the melody and the groove in my head, and we just kind of just put it down, and that was became this intro track of the record until then. So it's different from everything else on the record. It does have kind of a synth pop kind of feel to it. But I thought it was kind of a cool statement to make at the beginning of the record, to be like, okay, look, this isn't like a heavy industrial type record, but it's not like a meathead jock, kind of industrial record, if that makes any sense. Like, I don't know how else to explain it, but like, I mean, there's a lot of those kind of bands, especially in the late 90s, that kind of popped up, and it was just kind of like, this is just brainless sort of like industrial stuff. But then you've got your Nine Inch Nails, like Trent Reznor's in a different category, where it's like, he's doing industrial, you know, synth type stuff, but it's really smart and it's really unique. So kind of wanted to make that statement up front and be like, you know,
Okay. I hear that now that you mention it. Industrial is not my wheelhouse, and this is actually not, I told you before, this isn't my style of music. This is something that I probably would have glossed over, except for the fact that I know you, and you were like, hey, I'm doing this new thing. And I liked the limitation on it, where you said, I just want to do all bass. I don't want any guitars on it. And I was like, oh, neat. You can do all kinds of weird things in the studio and make your bass sound like anything you want. So that's kind of neat. I like that. I totally pictured it being more of a, I thought you were going to go more of your punk influence.
Mm-hmm.
I know you got into like melodic punk stuff early on.
Oh, yeah.
I heard a lot of like pick attack bass and open hi-hat drums and stuff. I didn't know you were going industrial with it. And at first I was kind of like, I wasn't like, yuck, I don't like this, but I was like, oh, okay. Whoa, I didn't see that coming. And here we are. Like, here I am listening to it. I'm like, you know what? There's definitely parts that I'm walking around humming. And this first song is one of them.
Cool, man. Yeah, I mean, that's the reason for that first song, was kind of to set the tone, as like, yeah, there's going to be electronic stuff on this. There's going to be, you know, synthy stuff. It's going to be kind of industrial, but it's also going to be, it's going to be different, and it's going to be, you know, try to be, at least attempt to be smart industrial. You know what I mean? Right. Like, thinking man's industrial. It's not a super proggy technical record by any stretch of the imagination compared to other stuff I've done in the past, but it's, sort of like the way I would describe it, and then we can move on to another song, is I told somebody at one point, I said, you know, I think there's different kinds of prog. I mean, obviously there's different kinds of prog, but I mean, if I had to break it into two broad categories, I would say there's really like obvious prog. Like, it's like, okay, this is super complicated. This is like you have to be a virtuoso for this. So you can put all sorts of different bands in that category, you know, Spiral Architect and, you know, whoever else. We just listen to it immediately, you're like, oh, my face is melting off.
Right.
But then there's like prog that is subtle, and it has to do with sort of the way it's put together. And I would say a band like, well, at least in their older material, like Muse,
mm-hmm.
would sort of be, you know what I mean? Like a subtle prog band. Like, they're a radio rock band. They're a early 2000s alternative rock band. But if you really, if you get into them, you start to realize, oh, this is kind of a prog band too. Like, you know what I mean? There's like symphonies at the end of one of their record that they organized, and like the songs always have, you know, themes that tie together. Anyway, so I kind of wanted to go that direction with this, even though it's not super technical.
Right.
I'm not shredding all over the bass. I don't, you know, that's not really my deal.
Mm-hmm.
But I wanted it to still kind of be like a, yeah, there's something proggy going on here. So, mm-hmm. Yep. Second track, Self-Minded.
Self-Minded.
Yep. And immediately I have had people catch on to that one, which I'm happy with, that some people picked it up. Self-Minded mm-hmm. was a Swedish metal hardcore band in mm-hmm. the early 2000s on Solid State Records.
You should be getting sued.
Yeah, I know. No, I put spaces in between. Theirs was one word, self-minded. Mine is three words, self-minded. there's a storied old timey tradition amongst album titles and song titles in my background of sort of giving a nod to influences. So Terminate Damnation, first BTA record.
Mortification. Yeah,
Terminate Damnation is a mortification song. Celestial Completion, fourth BTA record. Celestial Completion is a
mortification song.
No. It's an extol song.
Oh yeah, that's
from their from the record Burial.
Jackass. I knew that too.
When the blind lead the blind, only darkness they find.
Are you a parasite?
And so it's kind of like, you know, to me, it's kind of a fun thing that I like to throw in there every once in a while. So, so this is an album, not an album title, but a song. And I love Self Mind. I thought they were awesome. And, like Extol and like Mortification, I feel like they're one of those bands that, like, you have to be in sort of a little niche of people for them to have been an influence. It's so weird how that works. And it's one of the most wonderful things about music is that, like, the band can have literally like two followers. You know what I mean? It could just be me and one other guy, and they could be my favorite band and the most influential band in the world to me. And it wouldn't matter how big they are. That's really cool. So,
right. Yeah. It doesn't, it actually helps that they're not big sometimes.
Right. Sometimes. Yeah.
Yeah. I know exactly what you mean. You're talking to a guy who named his podcast after a Scattered Few song. I mean, I didn't pick Scattered Few because they're popular. I picked Scattered Few because I don't think there's very few bands that have kicked a bigger dent in my brain in the course of my life than Scattered Few, you know, but I get that, dude. That's really cool. What's the song about?
Yeah, so it's a song. We actually just put out a lyric video for it, so you can find it on YouTube.
Okay.
It's a song about essentially the dangers of living in an echo chamber, whether it be politically, religiously, whatever, sort of only surrounding yourself with people who agree with you and say the things that you agree with. You know what I mean? And basically just shutting yourself off to any sort of criticism or difficult, you know, challenging points of view. It doesn't specifically say in the song, you know, that this is talking about religion or anything. But Christians are certainly, I think, guilty of this a lot of times, especially where I live down in the Bible Belt. I mean, very guilty of sort of like, it's almost like a spiritual virtue in a lot of people's minds to shut out everybody else in the world. And like, we have to go to the Christian bookstore and watch our Christian movies and listen to our Christian music. And, you know, I'm always surprised there's not a Christian grocery store, you know, and all this, you know what I mean? It's like it becomes almost like we go to our Christian schools and our Christian this, and we got a Christian bumper sticker on the car and everything's Christian. And it's like at a certain point it starts to become, you know, an echo chamber that I think not only is intellectually damning, but I think it actually does damage to what Christianity is about. If Christianity is what it claims to be, then it's based on something that really happened. You know, a guy was alive and then he died and then he was alive again. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And if it's something where we're like, well, you know, I mean, but I'm just going to kind of live in my own little bubble over here. And if anybody challenges that, then I'm not going to listen to them. Then what you're basically, to me, what you're saying is, I believe this stuff, but it's not real enough to stand up to criticism. It's not real enough to handle the world and all the ugliness that's out there. And to me, that's like, to me, that totally makes Christianity look like crap. So I think a lot of people think it's, you know what I mean? I think they're doing, like, they're being holy by doing that. So that's the religious side. And then of course there's the political side, which, I mean, we could talk forever about that, especially with stuff that's going on right now.
Sure. Yeah. That political thing turned a corner.
Without saying anything more about the current president of the United States, one of the main things that I think is terrifying about the man, regardless of anything else anybody thinks about policies or anything, the one of the things that terrifies me is the fact that I really do think there aren't very many people on the face of the earth who are surrounded by more yes men than Donald Trump. People who just sort of like tell him that he's, you know, everything he does is great and his poop doesn't stink. And that, to me, that's kind of horrifying. Like, I mean, you can't have that haircut that he has and be surrounded by anyone who's going to be honest and challenge you. You know what I mean? Like to have that haircut, you have to be surrounded by people who just more or less worship the ground you walk on. Like,
I think I'm with you up until the presidency, like if we're going to go political here for a minute, and I mean, dude, I don't know shit, but the,
we knew that. Yeah, that's true.
I mean, obviously, but I think when everything you own has Trump on the outside, yeah, of course you're going to say Mr. Trump's hair looks fine, you know?
Well, but yeah.
Now that he's commander in chief, I do think this is going to start to rattle apart. I do think that everybody who's just got that whole like Republican ticket thing, I'm on that side already. I think there's people that are going to be like, I can't back this much crazy. Like,
I'm not disagreeing with you on that. All I was trying to say is like, let's say even before he was elected, I'm just saying one of the things that scares me about him as a human being is sort of he's got probably 50 years of his life where I don't know that he's ever really had to deal with anyone challenging him.
Sure.
You know what I mean? As far as, that's all I was trying to say is I think it's wildly unhealthy for a person. And so for that person then to win the presidency, yeah, I'm with you. I think it very well may, it may come unraveled, but who knows what that's going to look like. but anyway, but moving on to non-political.
Yeah, it's a perfect segue because the next song is called The Lie.
Yeah, but, The Lie.
Boosh.
The Lie is the first single that we released. Yeah,
man. This is catchy as hell. This song's really good.
Thanks, man. Yeah, and it's so what's weird about it being the first single we released is like I'm super excited because it's like, man, it's the first thing people are gonna hear. I think it's the strongest track on the record. Maybe not the catchiest track on the record. It's pretty close, but I think it's the strongest. It's like overall, it's like the heavy parts are the heaviest, the catchy parts are the catchiest. You know what I mean? It kinda does a little bit of everything that the Death Therapy does. Take this emptiness inside. Give me something to love. Seems I can't rely on how I feel. Okay. In the song, there's some groovy breakdown, type breakdown, if you want to call it that, type industrial stuff. There's some singing. There's some like, you know, there's all that kind of stuff.
Okay, time out. Where in the makeup of Death Therapy did The Lie land? Like, was this like one of the initial ideas, and you built Death Therapy off of something like The Lie, or is this something that you wrote three or four songs and then it found its way and you kind of nailed one, or where was that?
No, that's a great question, and that's what the first that you said. It was literally. We used to have a camper that sat next to our house a couple years ago, and I would go out there and sit in the camper and just turn my computer on with my bass and kind of jam some riffs. And that's kind of where I started coming out with these ideas. But literally, it's the second riff I ever wrote for this idea before I knew it would be a band. Like when I started it, I kind of just thought I'll write a couple songs because I'm bored and, you know, we'll see what happens.
Okay.
Second riff I ever wrote was that opening riff, that riff was the second riff I wrote for this. So yeah, I mean, you could say in a sense the reason it reflects a lot of what Death Therapy does is it's kind of the foundation piece. It's kind of like other songs build on that. So other songs will go more industrial, or they'll go more synth, or they'll go more groove, or they'll go more this, but that song kind of has a little bit of all of it in it because that's one of the first ones I started with. So,
uh-huh.
Yep. And And that song.
Now at the end of this song, I hear a lot of Jason Wisdom becoming the archetype. You take one line four times, and you do that Rage Against the Machine, turn up the anger a little bit each time, and then at the end you have that big part, and the brace yourself for the end of yourself, you know?
Right. Say there's maybe two or three songs on the record that have that sort of, you could call it, it sounds arrogant for me to say it's like a Jason Wisdom thing, but
it's an obvious hardcore breakdown. You can feel it coming a mile away, but that's okay. You got to give the pit an opportunity for people that are like, I can't handle this. I'm going to go get a beer now.
Right. Exactly.
You got to give that opportunity for the floor to open up, you know?
Right. But it's, there's a couple songs on this record that do that, maybe three. And, so the song, and this kind of ties in with a lot of what the lyrical content is. So we'll move faster through some of the other songs, what we're talking about lyrically, because this kind of sets this kind of sets the basis for what a lot of the record is about.
Okay.
It's sort of a song that's like almost like me. I'm back up and I'll say it this way. With BTA, every lyric I wrote for the most part was very intentionally like, here's a concept, or here's a story. I'm going to tell this story or this concept, like, you know, conceptually. Physics of Fire was a traditional kind of like almost epic lyrically concept album. Terminate Damnation, sort of almost your classic old school Christian metalcore, like everything's about apocalyptic stuff and end of the world and, you know, all this kind of stuff. And Dichotomy was a concept album based loosely around C.S. Lewis' Space Trilogy.
Right.
So that's the way I wrote lyrics with BTA. Well, it had been 5 years really since I'd written anything when I started writing stuff for this. And so, you know, really sat down and was like, what do I want to write? And I basically, even though the name Death Therapy is from a What About Bob movie, superficial level, there's a lot of meaning in the therapeutic value for me, like, I just decided I'm going to write a record sort of stream of consciousness style, if people know what I'm talking about. Like, basically, I'm going to turn my computer on, plug my bass in, no fancy tricks, no nothing. I'm just going to see if I find a groove that I like. I didn't even plug a distortion pedal in or anything. Just see if I can find a groove, turn a click track on, find something I like that sounds cool. And then lyrically, same deal. It's like, I'm going to jump in the vocal booth in studio, as if people still have vocal booths in studios. But there's no such thing anymore. I get in front of the microphone in the studio and basically like see what happens. You know what I mean? Like, and I had never even come close to something like that with BTA or Soul of Mores or anything. Just sort of like, okay, well, let's see what comes out here. I'm not going to really write a whole lot of stuff. Honestly, I transcribed a lot of the lyrics, for the record. After the fact, I the first time they ever got typed out was when I was going back and listening to the demos or something. Okay, what did I say there? This song, like a lot of the songs, came just sort of from a place of like, okay, struggling with, difficult stuff in my life. I mean, you know, the sort of cliche, I guess you could say, growing up, becoming an adult, you know, having kids, having a family, because that's, you know, what happened in those 5 years, and just the growing pains of life and feeling like, ugh, you know, like I want the stress to go away. I want this, you know, I want things to be easier. I want all this stuff to go away, and realizing the hard way that all of that is meant to be a part of developing me as a human being and shaping me. And that for me to wish that it would all just go away, which the lie really is sort of the suicidal thought of like, if I were to just kill myself, then all my pain or all my depression or all my anxiety or whatever would go away. And at the end of the day, I can't speak for everybody who's struggled with depression, but I mean, I know in my case, it's never a matter of like, you know, I really just want to be dead. Right. No, it's more of like, I want this that I'm going through to end, and I don't see a way that it's going to end. You know what I mean?
Right.
And so the song really comes from a place of just sort of saying like, you know, I want this to go away, but then I have to realize that if in order for it to all go away right now would basically mean that I go away too. Like I wouldn't be here. Okay. So it's, I don't know if that makes any sense to anybody, but essentially sort of wrestling with that. Honestly, what I'm saying is I wrote the lyrics from a position of like, I'm just going to see what, let's throw out what comes out and see what happens. And a lot of it, I just had to tell myself in the end is like, it may not sound perfect, but I feel like what I wanted to say is out there. I mean, and a lot of the great music that shaped me growing up, I feel like was written that way. I mean, I feel like, you know, half the lyrics for Rage Against the Machine and bands like that I love, like you can just hear, it's almost like this is something really personal that he had to say, you know what I mean? Not calculated, not planned, like, okay, let me make sure everything's perfect here. So the song kind of goes back and forth between what I'm thinking and what I'm struggling with in my mind, and then sort of almost like the voice of God saying, like, you don't know what you're asking for, and, you know, brace yourself for the end of yourself, you know, kind of thing. Like, so there's two sides to that, sort of like the dying to self, which again is where the personal part of where the name Death Therapy comes from.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that's this song in a nutshell. And if I were going to say there's any theme to the record, that would be it. I mean, the theme to the record, the song, the storm before the calm, the storm is sort of what I just described.
Like, wow.
All of that sort of wrestling, but rather than writing a record from what I would call sort of a typical, you know, Christian metal, hey, you know, things are rough, but then, you know, Jesus rides in on a white horse and fixes it all and kills all the bad guys. this is more, not that I don't believe that, but this record was written more from a perspective of like, can we just be honest enough to say like, sometimes life sucks.
Yeah.
You know, like, is it okay for a Christian to say that? And
I wish more would, right, man.
Going back to what I was saying earlier, I think if you can't say that, then your Christianity's is kind of superficial and artificial. So to some people, and I've thought about this some, like I have some friends I think will probably listen to this record and find it darker than what they wanted it to be lyrically. Like, man, this song here doesn't seem like it gives a whole lot of hope. It just seems kind of like, meh, you know, like, but taken as a whole, it's not a record that's without hope. Cause that naturally kind of comes out of me that I still believe in hope and I still believe in ultimate, you know, ultimate meaning and all these things. But I also am older now and I know more about the reality of life and I know more about struggles and depression. Those, you know what I mean? Like,
I feel, to
not get too much into a theological rant, here we are on the third song of the record. I would just say it this way.
We got time, dude. It's a podcast.
I would just say it this way. I think if you were to survey 100 people and say, what's the main reason you don't go to church, or what do you think sucks the most about Christians or Christianity? The first thing they're all going to say is like, they're all a bunch of hypocrites. And that, I think, is the superficial answer. And underneath that, there's a lot of roots to that. And I think one of the major, biggest roots to that is that the hypocrisy is seen as such a huge problem. Like everybody's a hypocrite, okay? Sure. In some way. Like, we all don't live up to our own standards. But the reason Christian hypocrites, I think, are seen as especially bad by a lot of people is because we claim to, and I haven't prepared to talk about, I haven't pre-thought about any of this. But I think it's because we claim to talk about something that is so big, so ultimate, so like everything, and then to sort of just like almost live as though like it's not that big and it's not, you know, I mean, like, I guess what I'm getting at is, I think a lot of people look at it and they go, that's not even real. You're this thing that you're like beating everybody over the head with, it's not even freaking real. Like, yeah. So why are you beating people? It's almost like, I'm trying to think of an example, but it's almost like, you know, if you're sitting and watching two dudes argue over, you know, a WWE or something or like that, you know what I mean? If one of them like killed the other guy over, you know, an argument about Stone Cold Steve Austin or The Undertaker, you'd be like, dude, it's not that big of a deal. It's freaking wrestling. Like, and number one, it's just wrestling, but it's, you know what I mean? Like, what is this nonsense? And right. I almost feel like a lot of people who are outside of Christianity look at it that way. It's like, man, they're being really mean to, you pick the group.
They're fighting over, these two guys are fighting and screaming and throwing hands over the Tooth Fairy versus Santa Claus.
Right. Perfect example. It's like literally they feel like, okay, this thing, it's not like, you know, you're not any different than I am, really. Let's be honest about it.
Right. And then you drop your Easter Bunny theory in.
Right. And you're hiding from all these things. And you're living in your bubble and you're doing all this stuff. And it just seems like, you know, like a little kid that's like playing with his imaginary friend. And then you want to like try to make, you know, enforce laws over this kind of stuff. And right. Elect people over this kind of stuff and blah, blah, blah. All I'm getting at is like, I think the hypocrisy is like sort of, that's what people say.
Mm-hmm.
But if they were to think deeper about it, I think a lot of it has to do with, you know, there's been, especially at least in America, there's been a long, like 50, 60, 70 years or whatever of just like, almost like a Christian culture that is just like a fluff thing. And I think that as that's become exposed, like it's people just look at it more and more as a joke. And I think that's one of the reasons, I mean, sort of like, you know, you see these giant mega monster pastors or whatever. And it seems like every other day, one of them's like getting fired because he cheated on his wife or, because you know, whatever it was, you know what I mean? And then like 2 months later, he's back preaching somewhere again. And it's like, wait, is this all just a big joke? Like, you know, what is this thing? And I think after 60, 70 years of that, a lot of the people in the world just look at it as like, okay, look, if this Christian thing is true, let's talk about it. But if it's just this kind of like fluffy Easter Bunny story that you're trying to like push on me and it, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So anyway, that's my little take on that. So
let me make this comment. As far as like, I want to back up to the part where you said, wow, maybe this sounds a little bit darker than people expected it to, because I wanted the rah-rah Jesus coming in on the horse and slaying the wicked and that kind of stuff. Not trying to sound morbid, but for those that battle with depression and think about suicide, some of them went out to that camper for a different reason.
Yeah.
And didn't come back in the house. You know what I mean? And I know a few people that's happened to.
Right.
I know a few that did it. And the fact that you have a man or woman or anybody hashing this out and figuring it out, and maybe at the end of the song, lyrically, it kind of landed a little bit like, that leaves a bitter taste in my mouth. That's not what I wanted to hear. Tough, dude. I'm working through this, you know? You got a man battling depression, and if another person battling depression comes out with a Just Give It Up to Jesus album, I'm going to throw up.
Exactly. Well,
cast your cares at the foot of the altar. Just knock it off, dude. Get
right.
Get real for a second. You got someone that's thinking about not being here anymore. Cast your cares to Jesus. Whoa. Right. Yeah, that sounds great to just these dismissive people that just want to walk away from things. Right. But no, let's. I always use the term "get under the hood." We have a problem to fix. This person right. might have synapses firing wrong. Maybe they need some medication right. to help them with this. Just I know a dude. I have a great friend who I love like a brother, who was like, I battled depression for years. It turns out that my finger in my head doesn't produce the right amount of chemical to manufacture what it needs to blah, 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 blah. I take this pill to help that now. I'm better.
Right.
Oh, you're depending on them. No, it's like it. I mean, what are you going to yell at a diabetic for taking insulin? Like, I mean,
right.
person, you know what I mean? Let's talk about things. Let's get this all out on the table and figure out what's going on with people.
And in this, and exactly what you're saying. So if in the middle of that, you've got this thing called Christianity, and all it has to offer is, hey, just pray about it, dude. Or here's another fluffy song.
You need stronger faith.
Then those people start to go, this is a joke. Yep. And yep. I think men especially, I don't know what the demographic is that you know, listens to your podcast, whether it's mainly dudes or
sausage party, man.
But if it's mainly dudes, then like, let's be real. Like, that's one of the reasons I think a lot of guys, you know, just kind of go to church if they go to church. You know, they kind of sit there with, you know, and they're just there is because what I've called it is I've said, like, it's really exciting to hear, you know, somebody go up and, well, you know, we did this and we did this and saved our marriage and we started tithing more and everything got better in our lives. And grandma was sick in the hospital and we prayed and then her tumor magically disappeared. I mean, all of that's great to hear and that's encouraging and stuff. But if you're a dude who, especially if you've struggled with depression or you're just a cynical dude, which is more than not, you kind of need what I've called a negative testimony every once in a while, where like somebody will come up on stage and go, look, we prayed for grandma and her tumor got bigger and she died, but God is still good and we've learned some stuff and here's what we can tell you. But she died and it was awful. It was brutal and we still hate it. You know what I mean? Like, I don't need somebody to get up there and go, I mean, yeah, I want to hear the good stuff, but like, the good stuff is rare. And I think that's one of the things we are not rare. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah, I do.
How many grandmas got prayed for yesterday that are dead today? And let's just be real about how many of them are, you know, the tumor went away. It's like maybe one out of a million of them.
Sure.
So that's a cool story, but it starts to feel like a fairy tale, to somebody who's got a real problem. Is really struggling with something, as opposed to let's put this guy up on stage. He struggles with depression and he still struggles with depression and he's got to take this medication and it helps him because look, let's be real. Biology plays a big, you know, doing that, all of a sudden Christianity starts to be like, you know, or it starts to look more like a real thing as opposed to like a, anyway, yeah, that's my whole thought on that. And this record does a lot of that is digging into that kind of stuff because I think that's where anybody has to go if they actually are honest with themselves about that stuff. I mean, to me, it would make me more depressed if I was just trying to cover it all up with all these like sort of, you know, fluffy, you know, songs and fluffy catchphrases and everything else. It would make me more despondent. It'd make me feel more like, you know, as opposed to somebody coming up and being like, you know, dang man, that really does suck. And literally they can just leave it there. Like, yeah, that sucks, man. You know, like without having to feel like they got to say, that sucks, man. But you know, God, you know, he just trust him. Just keep praying. It's like, well, yeah. Okay. But let's get there after like we talk for, you know what I mean? Let's talk for a few hours. You know what I mean?
Yes.
So anyway, there's a lot to be said there. Anyway,
good talk.
Fourth track.
Wake me.
I don't even remember what's the fourth track. Wake me when I'm dead. Wake me when I'm dead. So we made a music video for this track, and I'm excited about it. It's going to come out probably in a week or two.
Wow, okay.
Yeah, I'm excited. BTA had one, two. BTA didn't do very many music videos is what I'm trying to get at. We were a band that did.
Really weren't that good looking.
Wake me when I'm dead.
Wake. I did four records with BTA, and so you'd think four records, four music videos. We do have, I think we had three because one got animated, but that wasn't in that one because it was animated. You know, so two that I actually filmed. So this was pretty cool, pretty different, because I actually had to like do a lot of stuff, you know, in BTA songs were kind of like, okay, the song starts and 4 minutes later, Jason starts his vocals. You know what I mean? Like, or Jason starts out the song with vocals, and then there's like a 3 minute, you know, piano break in the middle.
BTA songs were the old school epic swords and archer battles, where it was like it had to start slow, and eventually these giant things came galloping down the hill towards each other. But then at one point, all hell breaks loose. And then, like, horses crash into shields and everything. And then it's chaos for 2 minutes. Yeah, that's a BTA song.
This was more like, okay, we got a 2.5 minute track that starts with a chorus, you know. So we're going to need to do, like a music video. Like, a real music, you know, not like the one BTA music video we did where it's got, like, video game characters wandering around. And then, like, we're doing a whole, like, Sam Raimi kind of, like, smashing the camera with swords kind of thing. You know?
Video though.
Oh yeah, it was a super cool video. And but anyway, yeah. So Wake Me When I'm Dead is just another in the same theme of the lie, but sort of coming from a place of like, death can mean more than just like, you know, to say Wake Me When I'm Dead on the surface seems like a you know, like,
yeah,
you know, a bumper sticker that, like, you know, Cletus might have on the back of his you know, on the back of his pickup truck, like, wake me when I'm dead, or I'll sleep when I'm dead.
You're
right.
You know?
On the other hand, at least in Christianity, death is often used as a spiritual metaphor, you know, for spiritual death. But I also think spiritual, you know, sort of, there's just sort of like, there's the walking in life and walking in death kind of thing. And so I kind of looking at it from a perspective of like every day, you know, I go through moments of death or life or whatever. Just kind of looking at it from that perspective, sort of like a, you know, not to make this like a, you know, hyper preachy kind of episode of the podcast, but I mean, in a way, I think one of the things Christians have goofed up with the whole word, like preaching the gospel, is we've assumed like the gospel, the good news, is something for people out there, as opposed to it's something for everyone. Like, we all need to hear it all the time. You know what I mean? Like, the guy who's been a Christian for 70 years needs to hear the gospel, the good news, today. You know what I mean? Like, at least the Southern Baptist sort of evangelist perspective has, I think, corrupted that and turned it into sort of like a, you know, altar call. Is the altar call is the gospel? Yeah. That's not it. Like, the good news is much bigger than that. But it's also simpler, and it's something we all need all the time. So taking it in the same way, I would say I need deliverance from death. I need resurrection daily. It's not just like a one-time kind of like get out of hell free card kind of thing, you know,
Monopoly chance card.
Do not pass go. Do not like,
or community chest or whatever. I forget which bin that was. Track five. You remember which one that is?
Track five is Prodigal, maybe?
I don't care. I tell you, I don't care. I'm a human being. I exist.
Right.
Prodigal's another song, sort of like the lie that was like a just turn on the microphone and we're gonna see what happens, lyrically, sort of a me almost arguing with myself kind of song.
About what?
Sort of about like feeling like God's not there, and sort of shit, you know, feeling like, you know, praying is just talking to the wall or talking to the ceiling.
Do you know how refreshing it is to hear somebody who led a Christian, a huge popular Christian band for so long and worked for RIFO and is a Bible thumping Christian from the Bible Belt down in Georgia and everything, and to hear that you have moments saying,
I have two seminary master's degrees
and have two seminary master's degrees, and to hear that you have moments where you go, man, I don't even know if the dude's up there or not. Like, that really helps.
I would say those moments are more often than not. I mean, to be honest, I mean, it's easy, I think, when you're, 16 years old in youth group or something to not feel that way. But I think when you're, when you're 35 years old and life is hitting you in the face and hitting you in other regions of your body regularly, then you're kind of like, man, okay, so I'm praying, but like, is this just a ritual? Am I just talking to the wall? Is like anything happening? Does it even matter? I'm okay, so God's there, but does he care? You know, and like all these sorts of things and like that go through your head. And again, like the first half of the song is more or less just kind of saying that. The second half of the song kind of comes to a place of like, it's almost like a response from God that like, cause it, all these times when I argue with myself, I mean, there's also the level at which it's like, okay, but if, let's stop for a second and think about this for a second. So yeah, it can really, really feel like there's nobody there. And it can really, really feel like God, if he's there, doesn't care. Mm-hmm. Like let's not deny that. So like, let's put those cards on the table and not try to sugarcoat it, which is again, like what I say in the song does. And a lot of these songs do. But then let's also look at it from the other perspective of like, okay, what's the main thing to Christianity? Like if you read the Bible or you read the New Testament, let's just say, it doesn't really ever say anywhere in there how you're supposed to feel. Like if you think about it, it doesn't ever say like, okay, so, and they all walked away and they all felt such and such way. There's not a whole lot of discussion about feelings.
I never thought of that before.
There's a lot of discussion about things that happened. I mean, the New Testament is, I mean, the Gospels, especially Matthew, Mark, Luke, John, I mean, is a testimony to, I mean, again, it's supposed to be eyewitness accounts, right, of this dude's life and what he did. And so if we take that as true, and I think there's good reasons to take it as true, but if we take it as true, then Christianity is not so much about how I feel right now as what happened. You know, did God come in the flesh, do these things that the Bible says Jesus did, die, is alive again, you know, those kind of things. And if he did, then for me to sit around and be like, well, I mean, he doesn't care, is kind of like, what? He doesn't care? Then what the crap was he doing for, you know, for 33 years, and especially those last, you know, three years? What was he doing hanging on a cross if he doesn't care? You know what I mean? Right. Now, of course, somebody could come in and say, well, I don't believe me, that's true. I think that's all a fairy tale. But what I'm saying is, from within the Christian perspective,
right?
If you've already bought into it, from within the Christian perspective, I don't think we have to sell our feelings short and just deny them or push them off and be like, oh well, who cares about what you feel? Because that's not what I was saying earlier. I'm not trying to say feelings don't matter. What I'm trying to say is, if I feel that way, I think the tendency a lot of times is to say, well, if I feel like God's not there, then I conclude he's not there. You know what I mean? As opposed to going, well, wait a second, hold on. If I feel like gravity's not there and I step off this top of this building, it isn't going to matter what I feel like. Right. Because gravity's the kind of thing that isn't dependent on my feelings. It's either true or false. And when we start to look at Christianity in that category, now a lot of people say, well, Christianity is not in that category. And we'd have to argue about that, I guess. But I think if you boil Christianity down to its basic essence, it is that kind of thing, because it basically says this dude came and he was God in the flesh. So that's either true or false. He either was or he wasn't. If he wasn't, you know, C.S. Lewis famously said if he wasn't, he was, you know, a madman. You know what I mean? Like, he either was who he said he was, or he's a madman, or he was something worse, like, you know, a demon. You know what I mean? The sort of C.S. Lewis famous trilemma. It's like, mm-hmm. you can't just say he was a good dude, basically. Because if you right, say
he was actually God, or he was like the worst heretic.
Right. He's the worst person. He's misled billions of people.
Right.
So he's completely out of it. Anyway, what I'm getting at is, you know, that's either true or false. Then there's this whole sort of like claim that, you know, that he was alive and he died and he was alive, he rose again. That I think you arguably have to go back and say that message is what propelled Christianity to begin with, is at least the message that this dude was alive, died, and was alive again. Again, there's all kinds of things to argue about in there, but it's either true or it's not. You know what I mean?
Right.
And so when I started to think about it that way and look at it from that perspective, I can kind of come back and go, you know what? I really do think there's good reasons to think that this is true, and that I don't have to sell my feelings short. I do feel this way. I do feel like it sucks. I do feel like he's not there sometimes, but you know, like I need to, yeah, anyway, but if he really did these things, then I can't in my right mind say he doesn't care. If he really came in the flesh, if God, the creator of the universe, really came in the flesh, you know, died on a cross and rose from the dead, then I can't rightfully sit here and go, well, he doesn't care. Why? Why? Because my, you know, 60, right. 80 year life didn't go the way I wanted it to. You know what I mean?
Right.
Hashtag first world probs. You know, I'm over here upset because I don't make enough money, or because, you know, my kids are acting up or whatever.
Right.
So anyway,
okay.
perspective. So that's kind of what that song's about. Okay. You know, prodigal, kind of the one that goes away and comes back. So kind of song does that. So,
okay.
Number six, your favorite.
The big one. Slow dancing with death every day of my life.
Well, it's definitely getting the most attention so far because I think it's the catchiest one. It's the first one we put out a lyric video for. It got a lot of people's attention because people immediately were like, oh, you know, hey, you know, techno drum beat with a, you know, speaking vocals over top of it. Okay, I get it. It's Marilyn Manson. Let me share it with all my friends who, you know, used to like Marilyn Manson. And, you know, it's a funny how, you know, the only Marilyn Manson song I know that really is like that is The Dope Show, which is from like 96 or 97. You know, I'm thinking now you guys are all experts now, Marilyn Manson. When I put this on all these people who are like, oh, well, yeah, that sounds just like Marilyn Manson. It does sound a little bit like Marilyn Manson. I'm not denying that. Because to be real, if I'm going to write something stream of consciousness style, just let it kind of come out of me, it's going to sound like what I was listening to at the end of my high school years. I think most of us would probably be that way. If you just kind of like sat down, you know, and wrote something, you'd slowly kind of find out like, oh, okay, this is what I was listening to when I was 18, you know?
Yeah.
So, you know, it's, if I write something like that, it's going to come out sounding like, you know, Rage Against the Machine with some, you know, Rob Zombie and Nine Inch Nails. And because it was, you know, 1999, 1998, yep. You know, and that's what I was listening to.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, yeah, the slow dance, it actually started as just one lyric, which was the, I'm tired of just surviving. slow dancing with death every day of my life. That was mm-hmm. And the first four or five times we played it live, that's the only lyric that was in the song. I just repeated it over and over and over again. I eventually wrote some more words, but that's still the main. There's not very much in that song lyrically. It's just mm-hmm. kind of a, again, I was laying in bed one night and was like, just, I'm tired of just surviving. I want to live this, you know, slow dancing with death kind of thing. Rolled over. I don't know how many people have done this before, but, you know, rolled over on my bed, grabbed my phone, punched a little note in my phone. You know, I was like, okay, now I go back to sleep. And there it is. That became this song. And yeah, I had the idea for the pentatonic riff, the little kind of thing. And
it's also like the slowest song on your album.
Oh yeah, it's by far the slowest.
It's got that real thick, like slow,
almost like sludgy.
Yeah, it's got that sludgy groove to it. When it kicks in, man, I was listening to it in the car, and when that kicked in, I was taking my daughter to volleyball, and I went, oh, that is groovy as heck. I was like, oh, yeah, because I have a loose mouth. Yeah. And she was like, she's making fun of me, groovy as heck, who says that? And I was like, a dad says that with his 14-year-old daughter in the car.
Hashtag like, dad life.
But the entire, yeah, right. The entire time I was just doing that slow, no. It is it's my favorite song.
Yeah, man. I'm glad, you know, it's been one of my favorites to play. And I mean, I've, you know, BTA, I don't think BTA ever had a song that was nearly that slow. So I had people ask me, you know, they were like, they heard that song, they messaged me, they're like, are you gonna have any fast songs on this record? Is it gonna be blast beats? Are gonna be double kick, what's going on? And I'm like, nah, that's not really what this record is. But the song we put out yesterday that has guest vocals, we didn't even talk about that. Guest vocals from Andrew from Project 86. That was track number two, Self-Minded. I didn't mention that part. Is a lot more upbeat, faster. There's lots of like, you know, tapping kind of stuff, which is
right.
Very old school BTA kind of, hey, we discovered how to do tapping on our guitars. So we wrote riffs, you know, and like, oh, hey, we know what tremolo picking is now. And I think that's one of the beauties, if I were to reflect on it, of why a lot of people love that record, that first record we did, is that like, there's something special. Like, you don't even know it when you're listening to it, but there's something special about listening to a bunch of dudes who are like 18 to 20 years old, write riffs, just because they thought they sounded cool and they didn't know how to do that before. You know what I mean? Like, hey, we learned how to tremolo pick really fast. Or like, hey, our drummer just learned what a blast beat was.
Exactly.
What I'm saying is I think it translates. I think it cuts through in the record. I think fans, without even knowing it, hear it. And it, to them, it sounds more energetic, more raw, more fun. Like it's almost like they can vicariously live through it, and they don't even realize it. Mm-hmm. That, you know, there are people that think, oh, they're just musical geniuses or something else. It's like, oh, we didn't know what the crap we were doing. Like, we were just, you know, I mean, we were slapping riffs together left and right because we just thought it was cool. And, you know, hey, what if we go from this section to this section? Oh, that'll be cool. Ooh, man, what about this time signature? And it's like, we just learned what time signatures were. You know, I mean, it's like,
All your favorite bands are just the ones that you think ripped off their favorite bands the best.
Exactly. So yeah, I would say that. And so with this record, it was just like, I didn't want to go anywhere near that stuff that I had done before, because to me, it'd just be too calculated. So it was kind of like, you know, let me get a drummer in here who doesn't play metal at all. You know, and just see what he'll write over top of this. Let me get a keyboard guy, my buddy Brian, who programmed the keys on the record, like, who is, you know, he's not a death metal keyboard player, you know what I mean? Well, and just like, let me just take the track and hand it to him and say, here, you do what you think sounds cool, and we'll meet back and we'll talk about it, you know, and figure it out. Like I said, much more stream of consciousness kind of thing. And then the end result doesn't sound anything like anything I've done, but it does. You know what I mean? It kind of does. It's like, people hear it and they're like, oh, it kind of does sound like BTA a little bit. But I think some of that is just, they want it to sound like BTA. Yeah. Yeah. Or that got my voice on it. You know what I mean? If anybody else is,
they're familiar. That's where they know you from, and they're familiar with it. So Solomor's got compared to BT. I'm not.
But yeah, and I think Solomor's it falls in that vein, like broadly. You know what I mean?
It's sort almost of like a childhood actor.
Right.
Like I can't unsee Fred Savage being on the Wonder Years.
So I'm hoping that people don't listen to this and go, "Hey, it's Jason, but he's older and fatter, and you know." Well, but
well, you but are.
Maybe I am. I have two kids. So
yeah.
I don't know if they can hear my kids on the record at all, but I should have probably put that in there subliminally. You like put some sounds of like my kids on the record. Could be kind of cool. But anyway, all right, let's go. Track 7.
Track 7, Possessed.
You are obsolete. You have no function. You're an anachronism, like a ghost from another time.
Possessed, the first full song that I ever finished for Death Therapy.
Okay.
So, first full song I ever finished. Same kind of theme lyrically. It's a song about like feeling like, you know, who am I? And I suck at life sometimes. But the good news about that is, you know, it's not about me. I'm possessed by something bigger. The very first track I wrote it as like sort of like a, hey, I want to write like a little dark minor sounding groove. And the very first demo that we did, it's pretty much just that. It was just like a, you know, four on the floor kind of bam, bam, dun, 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 dun. And it has definitely evolved on this, on the record now, like on the final product. It's very like, it's very industrial. It's much more what I, you know, my head, I always heard. But yeah, it's, I guess what I'm trying to get at is it's fun for me to see how it, because of the way I wrote the record, it's almost like I get to enjoy the songs the way the fans get to enjoy them. Like I can go back and listen to Possessed now and go, man, that's fun. That turned out really cool.
Right.
Because I just kind of like sat back and let it happen. Like I watched it happen. Like I, you know, like I say, I wrote the riffs and I arranged it. I put the lyrics to it. I told the drummer, I kind of want to feel like this, but then he did his own thing with the drums. And then I went to the guy with the keyboards. It's kind of like, I kind of want this and kind of want to do something like this here and some swells like here and this. And then he did his own thing. And then when it all comes together, then we go in the studio and we put it together and the producer's in there. He's like, well, what if we added this sample back here? You know, and it all layers over together. Then all of a sudden it's like, oh, cool. This is neat and different. I didn't expect that. You know, in previous, you know, things I would have done, whether it be BTA or even Solomor to a certain extent, I might have been more, you know, clingy and been like, well, no, that's not what I imagined. No, we need to keep it like I thought. With this, it's just been fun to just kind of be like, nah, cool, let's roll with it. You know what I mean? Like, let's see what happens.
Let me ask you said this is the first song that you wrote for this project. When? I mean, the album's coming out February of 2017. When did Death Therapy start? When did you have that, I have an idea, moment?
It was about November 2015. About probably November 2015-ish, maybe a little before that. I think November 2015 actually is probably when the first demos were done, when they were mastered, because I think it was sometime in January, February that I started sending them out to people to see if anybody was interested picking it up, the project, because I was like, well, I know I'd like to do more of these songs. It turned out pretty cool. We'll see what's there. And really cool. Solid State took a chance.
Yeah, man.
Took a chance on it because I didn't have the money to and people are like, well, you could crowdfund, you could do this, you could do that. I wouldn't say this like, you know, just all the time, but I think, you know, in this format, I think it's really, people need to know, like, your favorite Christian death metal or your favorite underground indie rock or metal band, like, they may be the biggest thing in the world to you, but chances are they're not that big. You know what I mean? Like, right. People are like, oh, you were in Becoming the Archetype. Oh, my Lord. You know, you got, oh, you know, I'm sure that you could just do whatever you want. I mean, you know, you just probably walked up to the label and they just handed you money and, like, you know, and you could have crowdfunded it and people would have given you gobs of cash. And it's like, no, not really. I mean, you know what I mean? Like, no, like,
I said Becoming the Archetype, not Demon Hunter.
Right. I mean, we're no, but, you know, so it is. Yeah, exactly. We were never a pop band. Right. We were never a marketable band. People liked it, and I'm glad they liked it. But we always, let's be real, we did better when we would go tour in Germany or South Africa than we did in the U.S.
Crazy, right?
Because the U.S. is an oversaturated market. It just is what it is. And a lot of bands, there are bands that are tiny in the U.S. that I see go and do these Japanese tours and just blow up. I mean, people love it. So anybody in Japan listens to this, we need to do a tour soon. But yeah, so all that to say, yeah, it was probably summer, maybe fall of 2015. So here we are, 2017. I actually signed with Solid State in February of 2016. So it was a year later almost from when I signed that the record's coming out.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to basically keep it a secret for most of that year that we got signed, which wasn't that hard because until the record label announced that we existed, all of my shouting from the rooftops, hey, I have a band, you know, didn't accomplish a whole lot. Right. Hey, you know, I used to be in BTA. You should have us at your festival. And they're kind of like, who? Right. You know, you mean that? Oh, yeah. Those guys. Yeah, we had them on our side stage for like 80 people. Yeah. We remember them.
Yeah.
No, we're not interested. You know. And that's a whole other conversation to have. But this is really, yeah. There's some small amounts of equity left over from BTA that I can kind of pull on a little bit for this. There are people who liked BTA who are going to hear about this and they get super stoked. But it's not as much as you'd think. Like, it's not like there's just tens of thousands of people just flocking to buy the Death Therapy record. I mean, if we sell more than 1,000 copies the first week, I will be so excited. I won't even know what to do with myself. Like, you know what I mean? If we sell 1,000 copies first week, I think the record label would immediately be like, oh my gosh, we got to do another record. You know what I mean? Right. Like, it would be so stoked.
Well, hopefully this helps. I mean,
right. But what I'm trying to get at is just to give people a perspective of like that band that you love so much that you think is like the biggest band in the world and could like is, you know, bulletproof. That's beautiful that you think that of them. But like, there's also a level at which it's like, you know, 10 dude or the podcast that you love to listen to or whatever it is, the, you know, 10 dudes supporting it can make it happen as opposed to 10 dudes who just decide five of them are like, nah, can't support that anymore. And it's like five dudes and now it's over. You know what I mean? It's like,
right.
You know, so anyway, there's that. What track are we on now?
8, Everything Burns.
Man, Everything Burns. It's true. Get some Gold Bond. We'll be right back.
Another little happy track.
I love, this is actually one of my favorite tracks on the record. Sort of a hidden gem on the record. I think it's the vocals are totally different in this one than any other song on the record.
Okay.
I do almost like a sort of a old school hardcore punk shouting kind of vocal kind of thing in this track. It's got a clip at the beginning from a movie that I don't know if anybody will pick up on. This one has a quote from Blade Runner in it, which is one of the most awesome scenes in that movie. But he says, quite an existence to live in fear, isn't it? That's what it means to be a slave. And it's like, if you remember Blade Runner, they're up on the roof and it's raining. And anyway, super awesome scene. Killer movie.
I've seen Blade Runner. I feel like I haven't seen it since it came out. So no,
You should go see it again because it's awesome. And there's a sequel coming out this year, I think, or maybe next year.
Oh yeah, I heard that.
Yep. So Blade Runner, so now I'll probably get sued for that. So just bleep this out. It's on the record. I can't do anything about it. But
I'm sure you'll be fine.
We won't release that song for any sort of monetary purpose. But
So people who buy the album are getting 9 tracks.
Yeah, and that one's not on there. Just track don't tell me. It's
free.
turns out that of your people who listen to your podcast, one of them, owns the rights to that movie, and now I'm screwed. But
the guy who wrote Blade Runner is a big fan of mine. Get out of here, dude. You're fine. Don't worry about it.
So the song is called Everything Burns, and do I even remember what the lyrics are about in this song? Funny story. We got time for funny stories.
I like funny stories.
So BTA had a song on the Dichotomy album that was a old hymn, How Great Thou Art.
Yes.
One of the most popular songs BTA ever did. We did the lyrics to an old hymn. So I thought, I decided, hey, I'm gonna write a Death Therapy song and put some lyrics from an old hymn. So this was that song. And we played it live, and the old hymn I picked was an old hymn called And Can It Be, which is Charles Wesley. We're talking, it's hundreds of years old song. It's not new. The problem is the chorus of that song, of the old hymn, is the amazing love, how can it be that you, my God, would die for me, which turns out is a very popular, like, contemporary worship piece, like Chris Tomlin or whatever tune.
So
what I thought would be a cool idea of doing an old hymn turned into, no one knows the parts of it that are from the old hymn.
Mm-hmm.
They only recognize this as that goober Chris Tomlin song. And I don't want to cover a goober Chris Tomlin song.
Amazing love, how can it be?
Exactly. So I get to the studio and literally in the studio decided, no, I'm calling an audible. Let's write some new lyrics. this is not going to be. So I actually think if you go to YouTube, you can find a video of us playing it as the other one, whatever, playing the hymn version at a festival.
Really?
So I have to get somebody to take that down for me. But anyway, so it turned into something else. Whatever the lyrics are about, just read them for yourself. I don't know. Who knows what the song's about? It's probably about everything burning.
Good. Probably a safe assumption.
Something like that.
Now we're going to have some fun. We're at the end here. We're at the end of our journey. The last two tracks are called Belmont Curse 1 and Belmont Curse 2.
Yep, at the you have probably the promo version of the record, which I sent you. So the full names of the song are The Belmont Family Curse Part 1, Night, The Belmont Family Curse Part 2, Day. So I asked people on Facebook the other day, where do you think the name comes from? And a lot of people immediately got it. the Castlevania video game series, particularly Castlevania 2.
Goodness, I don't remember it.
Track 9. So the main character of the Castlevania video game series. Do you know what game I'm talking about?
He's got
a whip and he's going to kill Dracula.
Yeah, but I mean, I think it's been 350 years since I played Castlevania.
That's the point. So yeah.
That hymnal was written more recently than what I played.
So the main character is a guy named Simon Belmont, and in Castlevania 2, every time it switches, this was revolutionary at the time for video games, it would switch on a timer from day to night in the game, and when it would switch to nighttime, like all the monsters and
the bad guys,
skeletons and stuff would come out, and it would say what a terrible night to have a curse.
Right.
Okay, that was the tagline. So anyway, tracks 9 and 10 on this record are an instrumental sort of tribute to classic video games and how they influenced me musically. To me, I go back and listen to those old Final Fantasy or old Castlevania or old, there's all kinds of video games. Sonic the Hedgehog, even. I know that sounds lame.
No, it doesn't. I mean,
but I go back and listen to the music in those songs, and I start to realize, I was 9, 10, 15 years old, whatever. And those songs were, I heard those songs probably more than I heard any song on the radio because I was listening to those as I was playing the games. And so, with a project that's largely, got electronic stuff in it, it was just like a no-brainer to me. That was like, okay, I want this to sound like super, old school NES 8-bit, kind of thing here. I want this to be like, I want that Donkey Kong kind of sound when he like throws the barrel and it hits Mario and it's like.
Understand you got to go, so thanks for taking the time to step through every single track on this album. The album's coming out February 24th on Solid State. Whatever, we don't have to say where it is. It's 2017. Google it, you'll find it. And thanks Solid State for letting me play a little tiny smidgen of each of the songs. Hopefully that's okay.
Yeah.
And Jason, thanks again for taking the time, and I hope everybody enjoys this. I hope they like that that we did this, and I hope it helps sell you those 1,000 albums. And we're aiming for a comma. We're going for a comma the first week.
Yeah.
Thanks, buddy. I appreciate it. Hey everybody, how's it going? This is Trav. I haven't done an intro or an outro in forever because I just haven't felt like doing one, but I have something important to tell you at the end here. If you enjoyed this, I hope that you are considering buying Jason's Death Therapy album. But there's more. Our good friend Seth Werkheiser, Mr. Skull Toaster himself, has a GoFundMe going right now to help the Women's Resources of Monroe County in Pennsylvania, up in the Poconos where he's from. I'm going to read you the GoFundMe. On the night of the 2016 election, I stayed up until 2 a.m. I slept horribly, and I got up a few hours later, and I went out for an angry run, and I've been angry running ever since. I'm going to run 6.2-mile stretch of the Appalachian Trail, and I'd love if you'd use this adventure to help raise money for my local Women's Resources of Monroe County, Pennsylvania. All money raised, after all the fees, of course, will go directly to the Women's Resources of Monroe County via GoFundMe PayPal. So I won't be touching a single penny that's raised, and I'm not working with them either. I'm just doing the running, and your funds will help women that are escaping abusive situations. The Women's Resources of Monroe County provides a 24-hour helpline, emergency shelter, counseling, and provide legal and medical advocacy. And they're a local organization for me, that's Seth, in my hometown, so I'm hoping this could do some good in my own backyard. I'm looking to do this run on March 18th, 2017, which is 1 month from today. Obviously not today, but that's what he wrote. So, long story short, Seth is putting up a GoFundMe. It's not a lot of money, and he's already got a lot of money raised for it. But I would like to see if the As the Story Grows listeners can push this thing over the edge. So, if there's any way that you guys feel compelled to help him out, and this isn't a political thing. This isn't a Trump versus a Hillary versus an Obama or nothing. This is just women abusive situations. Let's try to help them. It doesn't matter where your stance is on it, but it's worth looking into. I'm going to put the link in the show notes. Click on it. Check it out. If you feel compelled to do anything, buy a Death Therapy record. Help Seth with this run. And that's about all that I got to say. Have a good one.
As the story grows.
We love you. Take care. Bye-bye.